I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about a story that has captured national attention, the outbreak of HIV and the needle exchange program in Scott County. We're going to talk about what happened and how the state has responded to it. My guests will be WFYI side effects reporter Jake Harper, Dr. R. Andrew Chambers, director of the Addiction Psychiatry Training Program with the Indiana University School of Medicine, Dr. Carrie Ann Lawrence, Rural Center for AIDS STD Prevention with Indiana University. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about the outbreak of HIV in Scott County, Indiana, and the needle exchange issue and program there. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, my guests all bring a certain perspective to this stark issue, starting with Jake Harper, who is a reporter for WFYI Side Effects and has done some sterling reporting on the issue. Dr. Carrie Ann Lawrence, the Rural Center for AIDS and STD Prevention, Indiana School of Public Health in Bloomington, and Dr. Andy Chambers, Associate Professor of Psychiatry, Director of Addiction Psychiatry Training Program at the Indiana University School of Medicine. Welcome to all of you.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, it's good to have you all here. I think probably for the purposes of this discussion, one of the best ways to get started and for people to understand both the scope of this story and the stakes involved is to listen to a part of one of the stories that Jake has reported. This is about a young, well, not so young man in Scott County, and it illustrates vividly both how difficult this has been to contain at some level, and also what the stakes are at a human level. Could you tell us a little bit about the person who's going to be in the story that we're going to be listening to, Jake?
Sure. The guy in the clip, his name is Kevin Polly. He's basically a lifelong drug addict and Austin, Indiana resident. He's 49 years old. And
still young.
Still young.
Yeah.
But he's had to deal with some significant health issues, especially since this HIV outbreak occurred. In the clip, he explains pretty well how difficult it is to combat this type of addiction.
Well, and in this case, I think it probably is going to be helpful to hear a voice from, as it were, ground zero. So we will listen to that clip now.
I'll tell you something. The day I found out I was HIV positive, the single day, 20 minutes later, there's a young lady. She's probably maybe 25, I guess. And I was upset. I'm emotional for a man anyway, but I was pretty upset. And she had a pill. I think it was a quarter piece of nopamiforine, so she probably paid $25, $30 for it. And she said, "Kevin, I got a problem." She said, "I've got this pill, but no needle." She said, "Can I use yours?" And, "Honey, I just tested positive for HIV." "Well, we've used before. It don't matter." "Oh, my God, honey, it does matter. Before, I didn't know I was sick. I let her use my needle. The last one. Should have never happened."
That was the day you found out?
The day I found out, 20 minutes later. I mean, that was... It was, I shouldn't have let her use it, but she should not have asked. Pretty young lady. Why? I mean, I'll tell you why. She was sick. She was going through withdrawal. She felt bad. She would have done anything. You know, I've seen people pick them up out of ditches. You know, they'll do whatever it takes.
That was a clip from Jake Harper's reporting about the HIV outbreak in Scott County, Indiana. You were listening to a man named Kevin Polly, who is pretty much a lifelong drug addict, talking about really the process of sharing needles that has contributed to this outbreak. Jake, if you could, real briefly, could you give us some scope of some idea of the scope of the problem in Scott County? What has happened there for those relative few people who may not be aware of it?
Right. So I guess it starts back in December of last year. Doctors in Scott County started noticing an uptick in HIV cases. And then in February, the State Department of Health announced that there was an HIV outbreak. It was 20-something cases found mostly in Scott County, all related to drug addiction, and specifically this drug called Opana. It's a really strong opioid that people in Austin are using seemingly more than any other drug. They crush it. They crush up the pill and inject it. And because of that, they're sharing dirty needles at the time they were. And HIV basically got into this pretty tight-knit community of drug users and spread. They think it spread fairly rapidly. And since then, the number of cases has gone up to, I believe, 171 was the last count.
171. Dr. Lawrence, you know, for a place like Scott County, what would be a normal occurrence of HIV cases?
As far as, a county the size of Scott was looking, you know, very low numbers. I think on average prior to this, it was maybe 4 new cases. So to go in the process of 3 months, 4 months to the numbers that they have reached is pretty substantial, to say the least.
So we're talking about something that is about 45 times the norm then, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
And since then, and is how much of it can be attributed to this sharing of needles?
Well, I think in this case, just because of the community of users that it seemed to be most prevalent in, I think that kind of points to the main indicator, the main cause.
Dr. Chambers, you could hear in that clip, I mean, when Kevin Polly is talking and there's that long gap where there's silence, you can tell this is a guy who's going through an awful lot of complex emotions, mm-hmm. and he's struggling with something. And he says at the end of it, it never should have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Never
sure.
should have happened. Can you walk people, I mean, if, you know, in almost any other context, people would say there was some poor decision making here. What drives people in this case to make decisions like that, mm-hmm. knowing that their lives very well could be at risk?
Sure. You know, I think your question gets at the heart of what is addiction. And, you know, by definition, addiction is compulsive behavior despite negative consequences. You know, it's behavior that drives someone to do something when they know intellectually and even emotionally that there's harm. And the harm is coming to themselves, the harm is coming to others, and they literally can't stop. And this is a brain disease. This is a disease that involves certain parts of the brain. We know where those areas of the brain are. They, in fact, decision-making. The disease process, as it unfolds in individuals, does remove one's ability to make good decisions to a very large extent. And in addition to that, you know, not everybody is equally prone to addiction. There are differences among across individuals and groups of people about who is more likely to get this disease. So the analogy is just in the same way that intravenous drug addiction might set someone up for HIV. In the same vein, there are certain conditions that set someone for addiction, and one of those major risk factors is having an underlying mental illness. So having problems with certain brain areas that results from having mental illness can also change one's threshold to getting addicted, especially to opiate drugs. So I think that that's kind of what we're looking at. You know, this is someone who feels very, you know, sounds like he's very upset with what the disease has done to him, I'm sure, and what it's done to other people and how it impacts his interactions with other people. But by its nature, it's not stoppable alone. And he, you know, just because this is just because he doesn't have full control over that doesn't mean he doesn't feel the pain of the consequences.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the HIV outbreak in Scott County, Indiana. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can reach us on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Marion did and reach out to us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Marion says, why are doctors still prescribing dangerous drugs such as OxyContin? We must demand accountability locally and from our corporate dictated health care system. I'll throw that one to the two doctors on the panel here. I'll start with you, Dr. Lawrence, and then Dr. Chambers, I'll give you a whack at it too.
Well, I think there's a little bit more to it. I think what also I want to emphasize here is I think just within this situation currently or over the past few months in Scott County that really, and I think Dr. Chambers kind of have set this up, that this is such a complex issue. You know, we're looking at addiction in and of itself, mental illness in and of itself, the environment of the community in Scott County and other communities across the state, as well as systems that hinder or help these types of situations. And so I really think, you know, that might be one component, but I think there are some very legitimate reasons why physicians prescribe opiates in a very controlled way of pain, you know, managing pain as well as coping with other illnesses. However, there has become this dependence or addiction to pharmaceuticals that unfortunately has been misused. So I think that might be one way to address it, but it really doesn't. It's not necessarily the cure to the problem, the overall problem. So I think that recognizing various aspects of injection drug use in general is something that needs to be part of the public narrative and conversation within communities.
Dr. Chambers, in some ways, it sounds like Marion's question leads us into that whole chicken and egg thing. What comes first, the substance that people become addicted to or the need to be addicted?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or the opportunity, I guess, the forces that lead you to addiction.
Right. You know, the caller, you know, makes a good point. And what we know is that there has been a major increase in the last quarter century in rates of prescribing opiate drugs in healthcare. At the same time, you know, opiate drugs are really important. They're miracle drugs when it comes to acute traumatic pain.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, are they appropriate for chronic non-terminal pain? Where's the evidence base for that? What's the evidence for the consequences of that versus the benefits? And, you know, what is driven 4- or 5-fold increases in rates of opiate prescribing? What's driven sea changes in the threshold by which doctors will prescribe it, whereas 20 years ago they would not? And has that change really produced any net difference in pain control? These are important questions. The other thing I would say is that, you know, the flip side of this whole crisis is that our behavioral health system is a catastrophe. It is a dead, broken system in the United States. And, you know, behavioral health is key to public health. So if you don't have behavioral health, you do not have public health, period.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the HIV outbreak and the needle exchange program and challenge in Scott County, Indiana. My guests are Jake Harper, who's a reporter for WFYI Side Effects, Dr. Carrie Ann Lawrence, who is with the Rural Center for AIDS and STD Prevention with the Indiana School of Public Health in Bloomington, and Dr. Andy Chambers, who's Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Director of the Addiction Psychiatry Training Program at the Indiana University School of Medicine. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or find us on Facebook. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the HIV outbreak in Scott County, Indiana, a story that has attracted national attention. My guests are Jake Harper, who is a reporter for WFYI Side Effects and has done some sterling reporting on the story and the outbreak itself. Dr. Carrie Ann Lawrence, who is with the Rural Center for AIDS and STD Prevention, the Indiana School of Public Health, Bloomington, and Dr. Andy Chambers, who is Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Director of Addiction Psychiatry Training Program, Indiana University School of Medicine. Well, in the last break, we sort of talked about the nature of addiction and why this was hard to get hold of, and we listened to one of Jake's stories about a man named Kevin Polly in Scott County, who was both struggling with dealing with HIV himself and the consequences of his role. And is it Dr. Chambers, Dr. Lawrence? Is it fair to call this an epidemic now? Is that, or I know there are fairly strict definitions in the legal and medical sense. Does this meet them, either one of you?
I'll defer on the HIV question, but in terms of the addiction, opiate addiction epidemic, it does.
It does, Dr. Right. Lawrence?
Yeah.
It does? Okay, yeah. It qualifies as an epidemic. Now I want to talk a little bit about another one of your sources, Jake, for the story. Could you tell us a little bit about Brittany Combs?
Sure. Brittany is a Scott County native. She grew up there, and she became the public health nurse for the county about 6 years ago and didn't really see a whole lot of, drug abuse. It wasn't really on her radar until this HIV outbreak hit. And then since then, that's become her life, essentially. She even talks about it as sort of a mission that she's on, which is really neat to hear her say. But, HIV and reaching out to this addict community has become sort of what she does on a day-to-day basis. And she's running the Scott County's new needle exchange program. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that means her driving around in a van or an SUV with a bunch of needles in the back and, yelling out her window, seeing if anyone needs them. But also a part of that is sort of trying to connect people with addiction treatment.
I think probably at this point the best thing we could do is listen to her story in her words. So we will listen to Brittany Combs now.
I mean, just yesterday, two guys told me that they were going to rehab. And I swear, when they first started the program, I thought there's no way they will ever get off drugs. And now they're starting to go to rehab. So that's amazing. I mean.
That was Brittany Combs, who is sort of at the center of dealing with this problem in Scott County. I should ask, Jake, I mean, with these folks, how did you find them, and what was the reporting, the interviewing like? I would think, like, the piece we heard with Kevin Polly first, that must have been a very difficult interview to conduct.
Yeah, it was. It still gets me every time I listen to it, just that, especially that, you hear it in the clip, those 10 seconds
that
of
long
silence.
Pause where
that's just as much me as it is him. I didn't know what to say at that point because it just hit me so hard about, how hard this problem is going to be to really tackle and get under control. It's been an interesting process, sort of getting, I've gotten to know other addicts through my reporting, and getting to know the people that are dealing with these issues on a day-to-day basis has been really, really eye-opening and a fascinating experience for me as a reporter.
If you are just joining us, we're talking about the HIV outbreak, epidemic in Scott County, Indiana. If you would like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what Justin has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Justin, welcome to the program.
Hi. I have a quick question for the doctors. My mother, I am currently 38 years old. I have never known my mother not to be on prescription medicine. We have done family interventions. We've done rehab 3 or 4 times. We've done counseling. We've done all these kinds of things. 2 things. I find her have the ability to be able to find a doctor to constantly give her prescriptions. Number 1, and I don't quite understand that. Maybe you can explain that to me. And then the second, probably the most important question I have is that I find that she can manipulate the system once she gets into rehab. And they only keep her for 7 to 10 days. And so we try to explain to the doctors, listen, she's 30 years. It's been a long time. We need to try to figure out something long term. Is there an ability to be able to keep her longer, to help her? But they won't. They'll only keep her for, last time she was in was 10 days. And she's done this for 30 years. And I can't understand why the doctors in the system won't keep patients longer, because they're going to get out. They're able to manipulate. They're able to kind of get their way through the system quicker so they can get back out there.
Justin, thank you very much for the call and the question, and I'm sorry that your family has struggled with this. Thank you again for calling. We'll try to get you an answer.
Okay.
Well, I'll start first with Dr. Chambers.
Well, that, you know, unfortunately, that scenario is not all that uncommon, and you know, it's if there's any solace for the caller, it actually is really meaningful, because it points out a list of major problems with our healthcare system. You know, the first thing is, as I was saying earlier, there has been a massive increase in the prescribing of these drugs, and this has occurred over a 25-year period where doctors, their threshold for prescribing these drugs has really lowered. Now, most doctors I know are good doctors. They're well-meaning, but doctors do respond to pressures that are put upon them. And, you know, for example, the organization that accredits hospitals and clinics has really emphasized pain treatment as being key. And opiates are known to treat pain. So this is one example of how the threshold has changed. The other thing that's problematic is that doctors are basically not paid to communicate with each other. That is not reimbursable. So
economic incentive.
Right. And, you know, I'm not trying to make doctors sound like they respond only to what they're paid to do. But unfortunately, our healthcare system, you know, we talk about evidence-based healthcare. Well, you know, a lot of times the evidence base is not lined up with the reimbursement models. And, you know, the ACA Act is, I think, beginning to get us to look at this issue, and it's a real problem. So, you know, thirdly, there is not – our behavioral health system is severely broken. And when I say broken, I'm talking about health insurance won't reimburse it well. I'm talking about addiction treatment. I'm talking about lack of infrastructure. Where do you get treatment for these problems? Number 3, where's the workforce? Indiana, for example, has graduated in its entire history 8 physicians that are trained to diagnose and treat addiction, 8 individuals in its whole history. How many anesthesiologists and internists are we graduating? Dozens upon dozens every year. How many radiologists? Dozens upon dozens. So we have entered an era where medical treatment is very robust, but behavioral health and brain treatment is very, very weak. So this is, again, a case scenario that illustrates that problem. The final list of things that comes to mind for me is that, you know, we're also, you know, rehab, serial rehabs is really not very effective. You know, patients need, with addictions, need a team who's going to follow them through thick or thin over the long haul, not an inpatient, which is very short term. You can't get traction against this disease in a 7-day run. It takes months and years. And that means, in, you know, we can't have patients admitted for months and years. So it's really an outpatient battle. Now, why can't this person, you know, this family find an outpatient treatment team? Well, it goes back to, you know, you only graduate 8 doctors know how to do this in the whole history of the state. Then what do you, you're not going to have a lot of options. And, you know, for example.
Yeah, if you're just talking about Scott County alone with 171 people, that means all 8 of those doctors would have at least 20 patients.
Exactly.
Or more.
Exactly. And Scott County has no psychiatrist. Half of Indiana's counties have no psychiatrists. Half of our counties.
Okay. I'm going to use Justin's question here as a springboard, and I'd like all 3 of you to take to sort of help me and help the listeners understand this. I mean, that because these are, by and large, prescribed medicines, prescription medicines, how do the people get the drugs? And then the second part of my question is, why Scott County? What was it about Scott County that made this perfect storm, as it were, occur? Jake, I'll start with you.
I mean, I think Dr. Chambers can answer this a little bit better than I can, but from the people I've talked to, the pills are not hard to get in Austin, Indiana. And that's because a lot of people they're going outside. From what I'm told, the doctors in Scott County have sort of made a decision to stop prescribing Opana. But people are bringing them in from the outside. And a lot of people, these pills go for $160 on the street sometimes, sometimes more, sometimes a little less. But that's a really strong incentive to sell whatever you don't need for yourself. So it could be a really bad actor somewhere, but it's also a lot of smaller dealers that are just overprescribed these medications, and they have leftovers, and they want or need the money.
Dr. Chambers, where do they find the drugs? I mean, is it basically the path that Jake has laid out?
Pretty close. I mean, this has been studied.
Yeah.
You know, where are all these pills coming from? And, I think a lot of people assumed, even in the medical profession, that all these pills were entering public circulation through highly illegal routes, like, you know, people robbing pharmacies or people bringing in these drugs from overseas in the mail. And it turns out that's not how it's happening. The majority of these drugs are just coming from doctors' prescriptions that are fully legal. And what happens is they're prescribed, you know, these drugs are prescribed in quantities where they're not needed.
Mm-hmm.
And the value, the street value of these drugs is so high, you know, that, I mean, people can literally make thousands of dollars a month by just reselling these drugs. And there's a sense that they're safer because they're made by pharmaceutical companies and a doctor prescribed them. So they've got to be safer than heroin or street drugs. And so, there's a sense that these drugs, you know, by and large, are actually overflow, if you will, outside of needed treatment or inappropriate treatment. When you look at the data of overdose deaths, addiction rates, it's gone right up parallel, you know, over a 20-year period in line with the number of legal prescriptions that are being dispensed from pharmacies.
Dr. Lawrence, how about the second part of that question? Why Scott County? I mean,
well, I don't think it's just that Scott County. I think I think if you were to really look at the kind of profile of addiction, I mean, I think there was this belief that this type of thing only happened in urban settings. Mm-hmm. But I think over time, and, you know, again, Dr. Chambers would probably know more recent information, but over time we have seen these types of issues grow within rural communities. It just so happened that Scott County had the perfect storm brewing, and kind of all the factors there, uh, to to have to deal with what they've been coping with regarding this issue, but it's not an isolated incident. I think there are other communities, well, I know there are other communities in Indiana coping with the same issues as well as in our neighboring states. Someone I spoke with in Kentucky specifically mentioned how they didn't understand how heroin was on the rise in the Appalachian communities in eastern Kentucky. Well, you know, the same type of, you know, factors were present there, as well as, like, just having the finding the access to the drug, as well as some of the social determinants and the lack of infrastructure for any behavioral health services. So I think that it's not just Scott County. I think it's happening more frequently. Scott County situation brought the major issues to the surface once again.
It sounds like what you're saying here is that Scott County was the canary in the coal mine. We've got a larger problem, and that it's now manifesting itself in other parts. So my next question then would be, why now? I mean, as what forces help produce this at this particular time? As Dr. Chambers has pointed out, we've never done a great job of in this state of generating doctors who are trained to deal with addictions specifically. If we've only done 8 in the entire history of the state, which is coming up on 2 years, this problem could have existed for a long time. What kicked it into overdrive now, Dr. Chambers?
Well, when it comes to the addiction epidemic that relates to opiates, I think it's hard to get around the fact that doctors have been prescribing in much greater quantities, you know, in the last 25 years. So that piece is at least the opiate epidemic, we call it iatrogenic, where mm-hmm. the healthcare system itself went in the wrong direction, inadvertently or not, purposefully or not, mostly without being aware of what was going to happen.
Jake, what has this outbreak done to Scott County? I mean, in terms of, well, you've spent a lot of time there.
Well, it's brought a lot of reporters in, I guess, is one answer to that question.
well, there's that, but yeah.
I mean, like I said with Brittany, I mean, this was something that wasn't really on her radar for a long time, and the HIV outbreak sort of brought it to the surface for the Scott County Health Department. They're located in the health department building is located in Scottsburg, mm-hmm. which is a few miles down the road from Austin, where the majority of the drug abuse, I think, is happening. There were warning signs, but it just seems to have popped up from this HIV outbreak that it brought it to the surface for them. And since then, you know, they're taking a lot of steps to offer services that people have needed for a long time. They have a one-stop shop that now I think is open once a week, where people can go in and get signed up for a state ID, get health insurance, which they didn't previously have, and then hopefully get themselves on a list for addiction treatment.
How are they coping? You mentioned the fact that there are a lot of reporters coming in. The Scott County, and I probably ought to disclose so that I don't offend all of my relatives. You know, my mother's people grew up down in that area, so I'm familiar with the area. And it's not a place where you tend to have a lot of reporters coming to. How are they dealing with the attention?
So I guess the attention is backed off a little bit, I would say, since the numbers are trickling in a lot more slowly than they were at one time. From what I've seen, from what people have told me, I think there has been a lot of mistreatment of the addict community from many members of the media. People, or at least that's what people are saying. They don't like that, you know, that they're on camera when they say they don't want to be, that they're being, asked a bunch of questions when they say already that they don't want to be interviewed. So I think that's had an effect on the community, and it's made it harder to keep reporting on the issues as you go forward.
We are talking about the HIV outbreak in Scott County, Indiana. My guests are Jake Harper, Dr. Carrie Ann Lawrence, and Dr. Andy Chambers. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the HIV epidemic in Scott County, Indiana, and the forces that helped produce it. My guests are Jake Harper, who's a reporter for WFYI Side Effects, Dr. Carrie Ann Lawrence, who is with the Rural Center for AIDS and STD Prevention, the Indiana School of Public Health in Bloomington, and Dr. Andy Chambers, Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Director of the Addiction Psychiatry Training Program, Indiana University School of Medicine. Just before we went to the break, we were talking really about how you, not just the epidemic, but sort of the focus on the epidemic has begun to permeate its way through the entire community of not just, you know, Austin or Scott County, but Scottsburg and elsewhere. And, you know, it's begun to reshape almost the texture of the living there. In one of your stories, Jake, you demonstrate that by, you know, capturing a moment in a school. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I guess back in March, there was a group of high school kids that, you know, they saw a huge increase in the HIV cases, and they didn't think enough was being done to really combat the problem. And I think they sort of decided to focus on something that they could do. So they formed this group to basically sort of try to get to kids before drugs get to the kids. And they, you know, they started this program called Stand Up, where they can they basically go door to door telling parents about it and say, we want to take your kid for a couple hours, you know, pick them up, feed them, talk to them a little bit about stuff that's going on in town, or just generally just let them know that they're cared for, give them something to do, and then bring them back home just one day a week. And, you know, it's really obvious going to this event that, you know, HIV and the drug epidemic in town has had a large effect on these kids already, even from a very young age.
And I think probably the best way we can determine that is by hearing this exchange. So we will listen to that clip now.
Who remembers when last week we talked about viruses? Virus.
I just said that.
All right, what is a virus?
HIV.
That's an example of one.
And that demonstrates, you know, how old were those kids? The kid who screamed out HIV, well, screamed is not right, yelled out HIV, because clearly there was a desire to sort of get your hand up in the air and contribute, but I'm guessing pretty young.
Pretty young. I'm not necessarily good at guessing ages, but I would say around 6 or 7
elementary
years
school,
old.
So yeah. First or second grader, most likely. And that's how far down all of this has penetrated. If you are just joining us, we are talking about the HIV outbreak in Scott County. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You also can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook, as a listener who wishes to remain anonymous has done, or you can reach us on Twitter at WFYI. And questioner asks, do addicts in Scott County have immediate access to AA and NA Narcotics Anonymous meetings? I'll throw that one, I guess, to Dr. Chambers first.
I imagine they do. You know, NA and AA, you know, are traditional, longstanding peer support modalities. I would say that they're important, but they do not represent an adequate standard of care. They're not treatment. These are peer support groups that can definitely help people get better, but they're not really the only modality, or really an acceptable only modality for any area that's suffering this kind of a medical crisis. You know, addiction is a biomedical disease for which there are many proven evidence-based treatments that need to be deployed by experts in the field. And so I hope that, although I'm sure there is an AA and AA resource available down there, that it's complemented with other, you know, behavioral health, psychiatric, and medical treatments that are needed.
Let me, because this sort of leads us into the question of where we go from here. We've talked about this as a crisis, talked about it as an epidemic. It's clearly bad. And we've talked a fair bit about the forces that brought us to this point. How do we meet the challenge? I mean, how do we go about making things better in Scott County, and as Dr. Lawrence has pointed out, in now many other rural communities? Dr. Lawrence, I'll start with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think some of it we've already talked about. I think it's strengthening our services and just capacity to have access, increased access to health resources, specifically behavioral health or mental health, addiction services. And for, I would say, the general, I'm going to make the blanket statement of saying, you know, a lot of Indiana in and of itself is rural, or what would be considered rural. And I think they're, as demonstrated in Scott County, even though they are on a major highway, you know, that size of the community doesn't necessarily have the public transportation to get to services. And so I think there really has to be an investment by our state to build and all of the or to provide the resources to build really community-based services, as well as Dr. Chambers noted, building to and strengthening the workforce to support those, or to be part of those services. And two, I really think it's building a public awareness of you know, mental health and addiction in and of itself. I think there's a lot of misconceptions. And as a result, I would say too, you know, it's really hard to get people to understand why somebody can't just quit using. And so I think that kind of educating our public about that and demonstrating the need, and then hopefully strengthening local capacity to address these needs through, cultivating resources, I think is, to me, just a start to addressing some of these issues.
We've gotten a Facebook message from a listener named John. The reason I'm chuckling is he puts at the base of the message a note disclosing that he is Dr. Lawrence's proud husband. So that's, and thank you. Please thank your husband for calling in. This is a somber subject. I think we all could use a little humor relief here at the moment. On the subject on why Scott County, would you comment on the socioeconomic factors? You touched on the street value of unused medication, which is surely a greater incentive for people in dire economic straits. On a related note, addiction treatment is much less available to those who can't afford health care. So, and I think I wanted to take the conversation in that area anyway, so thank your husband for creating the bridge for me to do that, about the other sort of non-medical factors here, the political ones as well. I mean, the fact that we debated how to deal with this in state governments levels and all of that. I'll throw it to you.
I think that's something, though, giving a little bit of my background, I worked in a variety of of health and social services prior to getting my PhD. And what I noticed, specifically with families and individuals involved with both the criminal justice and child welfare system, was that those folks that I was in, families that were impacted or affected by addiction, there seemed to be a lot of issues surrounding poverty-related issues as well. And so, and then also where you live and the stigma behind some of the addiction issues, I think is something, too, that needs to be part of the conversation. Because if people, it's most of the folks that I have dealt with over the years, or not even, or have interacted with over the years, who have struggled with addiction, is as a result of various symptoms, I guess, with using kind of medical terms within their life, such as job loss, or kind of that even just access to services, but also like having to admit there might be a problem that they need to address, or even how to identify that there's a problem that may need to be addressed prior to other ways of coping with the issue. So I think that definitely has a problem, some major, or can play or be a major contribution in this issue. So I think that, again, going back to what I said before, for these rural communities where, especially in Scott County, where there may be some structural barriers too with in regards to education, transportation, employment, in addition to having local health services, including behavioral health and mental health, I think that needs to be addressed as well. Because for a lot of these folks, you know, some of the conversations that I've had as I've been doing research around the state related to linkage and retention and care and HIV with the Indiana Minority Health Coalition, some of the things that are coming up are the very same things that we're addressing in regards to addiction related services. So access to services, the stigma when, you know, for the individual in attempting to get services and afraid of what, or fears around what other people might think of them, not having the support both from a personal standpoint there, but also a financial standpoint as well. And so I think we really need to look at those social determinants along with kind of our coordinated response to meeting the various needs of an individual to help them, you know, take care of themselves as well as take care of their family.
Dr. Chambers, how do we go about addressing, I mean, almost anyone who has seen more than a couple of springtimes has dealt with either a friend or a family member who's had an addiction issue. We had a caller who obviously has dealt with it and all of that. And in the cases that I have seen, one of the primary objections that comes to getting help is just what Dr. Lawrence said, sort of the stigma there, that it's an acknowledgement of weakness or it's a personal defect that they just don't want to acknowledge. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't.
Right.
How many times I've said, I'll just deal with it on myself, mm-hmm. on my own.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get past that stigma? I mean, some of this is a social question more, mm-hmm. even more than it's a medical one.
Right. Well, you know, it's definitely social and medical, certainly. And, you know, I think that the context here is that, you know, it used to be HIV itself, right, was highly stigmatized. It still is to some extent. But compared to compared to addiction, I don't think anything is as highly stigmatized as this one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it is a biomedical disease. It is treatable. The thing is for many years, the United States and our governments have decided that addiction is a criminal issue. To this day, the United States incarcerates more people than any other country in the world per capita, largely because we are criminalizing brain diseases. Somehow it doesn't fall along the lines of Alzheimer's. We're not going into nursing homes and putting those people in jail. But there are certain brain diseases we continue to criminalize. So as long as you do that, you are not framing it as a treatable, fundable medical problem. And, you know, the effects of that on our behavioral health system are insidious but very real, you know, and on patient lives. You know, you mentioned a minute ago we were talking about D.C., you know, Child Protective Services, for example, and the criminal justice system itself and the poverty that these people have. A lot of people don't realize that when a DCS case opens up on a mom and her children are taken away, you know, in very typically it's a mom who's suffering mental illness and addiction. Well, when a DCS case opens and takes those children away, if this mom had Medicaid insurance, well, that insurance is taken away as well. So now the patient can't even pay for mental health and addiction treatment services that actually is the primary problem, for example.
We've gotten a Facebook question from a listener named Mary that in some ways I think we've already addressed, which is, what's to keep this from happening in other parts of the state? It sounds like it is happening in other parts of the state, right? Maybe not quite to the degree yet that we've hit in Scott County. Jake, I want to, you know, in the limited time we've got left, where does this story go from here? I know you're going to continue following Kevin Polly and some of the other folks. You know, where does it go next?
That's a good question. You know, I've been reporting on this for a while. And one thing I'm anxious to do is report on something else, but also...
something cheerier.
Maybe. Yeah. But also, I think bringing these addiction resources that we're talking about to Scott County is extremely important. I think Dr. Chambers is actually... working with people to do that, and you know, going forward, I think that's a huge part of the story that hasn't really been fully addressed yet. We hear about containing the HIV outbreak and needle exchanges going to other counties that are requesting them now, but we're not hearing a lot about what's being done to address the underlying addiction problem that's at the root of all this. So that's where I'm hoping to go with my stories, at least.
And presumably the stories you've done so far, people can find on our website, right, WFYI.org?
It's true. You could, there's a link to my latest series on WFYI.org.
And I think at the moment that'll have to be the last word. It's not going to be the last word in this discussion, though. I'd like to have all of you back to talk through these issues, because I think they matter a great deal, not just to the folks of Scott County, but to everyone who lives in this state. My thanks to my guests, Jake Harper, Andy Chambers, and Carrie Ann Lawrence. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood, and board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.